All right. Welcome to Live from IPY, and we're going to be talking with Polar Trek teachers Robin Elwood and Cameo Slaywell from McMurdo Station. Today is November 24th, 2008, and the topic of today's IPY event is What's Under the Ice? And we're going to learn about AUVs and ROVs and other things being used in Antarctica to look under the ice. Okay, well, we have Robin and Cameo on, and we're going to get started here. So let's see. Cameo and Robin are participating in the Polar Trek program, and it's a professional development experience where we match teachers with researchers so they can get authentic polar research experiences. Robin's about done with her. She's heading home tomorrow. I'm sure she'll talk about that. And Cameo's midway, and we have a couple of other teachers that are either headed down there or are down there right now. It's a three-year project, and we're sending teachers to the Arctic and the Antarctic in celebration of the International Polar Year. And, of course, you can follow Robin and Cameo and others at polartrek.com. So we're going to get started with the main presentation in Antarctica. And and I think I'm just going to turn it over to Robin and Cameo right now. So go ahead, ladies.
All right. Well, first of all, thanks for everybody for joining. It sounds like we've got a really nice group out there today. So thank you for tuning in. And before we say anything else, I want to thank Arcus and Polar Trek for allowing this opportunity for Cameo and I to come down here. And especially thanks to Peter Doran and Stacy Kim for taking us on and bringing us down here, and obviously thanks to all our schools as well. So we wanted to talk a little bit today about the AUVs and ROVs that are being used down here, differences between them, some similarities between them, what they're used for, what their advantages are in the different scenarios that they're in. Peter is using an AUV, which is an autonomous underwater vehicle. And Stacy is using an ROV, which is a remotely operated vehicle. Peter's is sort of short and stout, and Stacy's is sort of long and skinny. So they're doing very different things. So I guess we can move on to some of the team. The next slide. Okay, so this is the Endurance team that's showing now. This is Peter Doran's group. And these folks, it's an amazing group of people. They're from all over the country, really. There's a core group of folks from Austin, Texas, from Bill Stone's company called Stone Aerospace, and they've sort of designed and built this AUV, and Peter and Bill have assembled this team, and it's really a privilege to be able to work with them. It's an amazing group.
And this is the Skinny team. They're primarily from California, but all of them are really interesting, and they're led by Stacy and her husband, Bob.
All right, so this slide is obviously a picture of the entire continent of Antarctica, and we're sort of situated down in the bottom central part there in that little, in the Ross Ice Shelf area, and McMurdo Station, there you go. McMurdo Station is right within the circle, and basically all of our sites are within that area. Peter is taking Endurance out to the dry valleys, and Skinny is being used in McMurdo Sound primarily, is that right? So this is just a sort of a close-up of the area we were just talking about. Ross Island, you can see, is right under the words and Skinny, and that's where McMurdo Station is. We're actually, if you look at the bottom of the circle, that little point that sticks out to the bottom left, that's the peninsula that McMurdo Station is on. And Skinny is, there you go, Skinny is going to be operating through that area and up through probably the whole Ross Island. You go up.
So Cameo will talk more about this later, but we have three sites, two of which are on Ross Island, one right close to where we are now in Cape Armitage, one up by Cape Evans, and then one over under the Kotlitz Glacier at Held Island.
And then the Endurance, if you go straight across from Ross Island to where the Brown Valley areas are, those are the dry valleys, and you can see one that the dry valley actually extends out to the Ross Sea there, or the Ross Ice Shelf. Lake Bonnie is up at the top of that valley where the Taylor Glacier comes into the valley. So we can go ahead and go to the next one. So these are just some of the pictures of the different robots. Obviously, Endurance is on the left, and Peter spent a lot of time coming up with the name for Endurance. And it stands for Environmentally Non-Disturbing Under Ice Robotic Antarctic Explorer. And his robot basically will submerge just below the surface of the ice and then drop a sonde or a science package, which has a bunch of different instruments on it, down into the deeper water to get a geochemical picture of the lake, as well as do some mapping and imaging. And I'll let you talk about Skinny.
Skinny stands for Submersible Capable of Under Ice Navigation and Imaging. And it's kind of the opposite of endurance. It's trying to go as deep as it can. In fact, it broke 700 feet the other day. And it's trying to see areas that divers can't get to as close to the bottom of the ocean as it can.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about the difference between these two vehicles is the autonomous underwater vehicle, Endurance, is not tethered. So it's a free vehicle, and it executes a pre-programmed pathway to sample its environment. And Skinny is on a rope, basically, a tether to the surface that sends commands down and pictures back. And so we're in control of it, but we can't go as far away as Endurance can from the main hole.
One thing I'd like to point out is even though Endurance is autonomous, we're going to keep it on a tether, a fiber optic, while we're operating in the dry valleys because it's still an experimental vehicle, and we want to look over its shoulder and make sure it makes all the right decisions. There's been a long history of these vehicles getting lost in Antarctica, so we don't want that to happen.
Peter also likes to point out that the name of his robot, Endurance, does not want to be reminded of Shackleton's Endurance ship that got crushed in the ice. This is a picture of the Johnson Space Center, yeah? And so I'll let Peter talk about this.
Yeah, we did. We tested the vehicle in the Johnson Space Center Neutral Buoyancy Lab. This is where the astronauts go to train to work on the space station and the space shuttle. So they let us use this facility. They didn't actually let us. They charged us quite a bit of money. But we were able to test a lot of the vehicles functioning in this facility. And the great part about this facility is there's cameras everywhere underwater, so you can really capture what the vehicle is doing and how it's responding to your command. And they also wanted us to have a rope attached to it all the time because some of this stuff in the pool is very expensive, and they didn't want this experimental vehicle running into anything. But it was a great facility, and it was a very good test.
Yeah.
So this is just sort of an underwater glimpse of Endurance. You can see it really just sort of hovers just below the surface of the water, and it will go traverse back and forth across the lake of Lake Bonnie. We'll talk about what its primary goals are in just a second. But one of its missions is to map the bottom of the lake. So it will hover just below the surface and then send instruments down into the deeper water to get its measurements.
Robin, you guys had a question up from Red School. How much does the Endurance weigh?
It weighs about 3,000 pounds.
Oh, wow. Oh, and then related to that, how does it send the instruments?
There's a sonde that, which is basically is an attachment that has lots of different scientific instruments on it, and it's on a cable that gets lowered from the Endurance itself and then pulled back up. So it'll go to its testing station, it will lower the sonde, it will bring the sonde back up, and then it will move on to its next station. And I think the next slide actually has the goals of Endurance, so maybe we'll let Peter talk about that real quick.
Okay, so Endurance, the idea of Endurance is to build something, a prototype of something that may eventually go to another planet. So, for instance, Jupiter's moon Europa is an ice-covered, believed to have an ice-covered ocean. And so the idea would be to test how you do science autonomously like this, where you can't talk to it, you can't tell it what to do, and get the data back. And so Endurance itself will never go there. It's too big. 3,000 pounds is huge to get off this planet. But we're testing how you do the science. And to do that, we're doing three things. We're going to produce a 3D, three-dimensional map of the subsurface of this lake we're working in, West Lake Bonnie. We're going to produce a photo mosaic and a map of a glacier face that comes into the lake. The glacier pushes into the lake, and about half of it is above water and half is below water. And this is pure discovery. We're really excited about this because no one knows anything about this glacier face contact into the lake. And the other is to do this vertical drop sonde mission. So this is dropping that instrument package every 100 meters in the lake on a 100-by-100-meter grid, and getting a profile of the water and the chemistry in the water, and then putting that whole data set together and getting a three-dimensional map of what the chemistry in the lake is like.
Okay, and Peter, while you're on, there were a couple of students that had some questions. They wanted to know what the Endurance uses for buoyancy, and somebody else wants to know, Kristen wants to know, how long did it take to build the Endurance?
Okay, first of all, what it uses for buoyancy is we have these things called syntactic foam wedges, which are essentially glass spheres encased in a high-strength epoxy. That's the orange things you see on there. That's the flotation. And then we get it close to neutral, and then we have motors in the center of the vehicle that can drive it up and down. So it actually powers itself up and down rather than changing its buoyancy. And what was the second question? Oh, how long did it take? Endurance is actually the second generation of this vehicle. It was created initially under another project called DepthX for exploring flooded caves in Mexico. And then we got the proposal to do Endurance, which is a modification of that vehicle. So DepthX was 3 years in development. We've been working on this for about 2 years now, so 5 years altogether. And if you add up the money, the vehicle is worth about $5 million. So
wow.
We are taking extra care with it.
Thanks.
So the next picture there, that's just sort of a, on the bottom left is a drawing of what the floor structure will look like for Endurance. So there's, what, 8 or 12 floor panels, and each one of those panels weighs about 400 pounds. So if you've been following the journal at all, one of the first things we had to do was build the floor out in McMurdo to make sure that all the parts would still fit together, because we can't make modifications out in the dry valleys because it's a protected area. So we had to assemble everything out here. You can see in the drawing there that the robot will actually be lowered through the floor. There's a cover that slides back and forth over what's called the moon pool. And the gantry is what will raise and lower the robot. Obviously, we can't do that with 3,000 pounds. And the bot house, as it's been come to be known, is the big blue tent that you see in the top right. So we've had quite a challenge getting it all built and put together, and we took it all apart again yesterday, and it's going to go to the field starting tomorrow.
Wow. Let's see, a couple of questions from Schofield. Let's see, how long will Endurance go for, and what is its power source?
Because of the battery supply, it's all battery-driven. Our individual missions will probably be in the range of about 6 hours a day. And we're going to come back. We want to come back with a lot of battery power because we don't want to die out under the ice somewhere. So we've got a lot of conservatism built into in each mission plan. Keep the second question. The power. Was the question the power supplies? The power supply is lithium batteries. Very, very high-tech batteries that we have to treat very carefully. It's not just plug into the wall and charge and come back 10 days later. You have to really monitor them very closely.
Okay, and then question from Rye Junior High. Why were the colors chosen for the Endurance?
Well, that's an interesting question because I wanted the colors to be changed. But the colors, the orange color was just chosen because it's very visible underwater, so when you're taking pictures, orange shows up underwater very well. I had asked Bill Stone to change the color for this project so it had a different look, but that was sort of so low on the priority list that it never got done.
Okay, and another question that came up from Liverpool High School. Jesse was wondering how many times you have dove and how many more times you will need to dive.
For Endurance, we're hoping not to dive that much. The only reason we are planning to dive is in case the vehicle gets stuck somewhere and we have to send people down to free it. We'll probably dive to take some pictures of the vehicle, but other than that, we're going to be diving very little. I myself dive every other year in the Dry Valley Lakes, and lately Robin's been doing that as well. I've gotten my share of thrills and would rather sit warm on the surface for a while.
Okay, thank you.
I'd have to say sometimes it's warmer underwater than it is on the surface.
Oh, now that's an interesting thought. Okay, go on.
All right, so this is just a quick schematic of what the Endurance will actually look like. You can see that the blue square panel on the top is supposed to represent the ice cover in the lake. First, they drilled a hole through the ice, and then they melted the hole into a bigger diameter, which now is, 8 or 9 feet in diameter. to allow the robot to fit through. So then we'll put the floor over the top of that, and then we'll lower endurance down into the water, and it will, like I said, crisscross back and forth and send that sonde package down into deeper water. So that's just sort of a schematic of it all. Okay. And then the next picture here shows West Lobe Lake Bonney, which is where the Endurance is going to be launched. And you can see on the bottom left picture there, is that purple?
That's
where they're hoping to get the maps for the lakes. And then the top right picture, that's the pattern that Endurance is going to run. And all the red dots represent where measurements will be taken. And if you see in the center of that picture with all the red dots, there's a circle with nothing in it. That's a place where we're staying out of because there's another experiment going on there, and they don't want to disturb that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just where we do. Sorry, that's where we do every year manual measurements, and we've got instruments hanging through the water column there. And one of our big fears is that Endurance gets snagged on something, so we're making a keep out zone there where it will not go. And then the other on top left is a sort of image showing the front of Taylor Glacier and how we're going to map that as well.
Okay, and somebody's asking, what is the depth there that you're probably just of the whole lake?
The deepest part of the lake is about 40 meters.
Okay. And then two more questions that came up. Why do you have to cover the moon hole?
That's basically a safety thing so people don't fall in.
Oh, that makes sense. And then another question is, what is the most unexpected event that happened thus far in your expedition?
That's a good question.
let me try it. The most unexpected event was actually, like, we got here in our floor. We had to really get moving on the floor quickly to get everything done. And we arrived here and expecting our floor to be in McMurdo, ready to go. We found out that it was still in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and it hadn't even arrived in New Zealand. So we were delayed by about a week in getting stuff going. So that was probably the biggest surprise so far.
Okay. Thank you, the Endurance Group. I think we'll move on to the Skinny Project now.
Hi. Skinny is actually a three-year project. It is being built, tested, and used. So there's a lot of changing going on all the time. And a big number of the people on the team are actually engineers, not scientists. And you can see that they're using lots of different equipment to test and see what can work and what won't work.
So the engineers, we have several different kinds of engineers. We have software engineers who are making sure that everything that we want the vehicle to look like in terms of the interface, they're writing that code. And we have mechanical engineers who are actually building the body of Skinny and all of the lights and everything else. And then we have electrical engineers, electronics engineers, who are working on all the wiring. So you can see in those various pictures that there's just a lot of different things going on. And even though we divide everybody up by these titles, it turns out that everybody does a little bit of everything, which makes it really fun.
But because there's so many different parts and pieces, there also are that many different things that can go wrong. So we're constantly testing Skinny just about every day, and she has her own test tank down here, and we strap her in and test things and find out what's wrong and then try to figure out how to fix it.
It's a lot easier to test things in the tank than once we're out in the field because once we're out of doors, it's cold. We've usually driven quite a distance away. So having a nice warm lab with all the electronics and the soldering irons and everything else is a really good place to make sure that nothing's going to go wrong when we do go out of doors.
Is the water in that pool salt water?
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Now I'm on the button, sorry. actually, the real test is to take Skinny out into the field. And that's where the real work and the fun begins, because you have to actually dig holes or drill them. And as you can see in one of the pictures, the holes get pretty long and pretty deep. And you have to build three holes, not just one. And then you put Skinny in and hope everything goes okay.
So we make three holes because we have the one main hole that Skinny is diving through, and then we have two holes that we're putting in a navigation system through so that Skinny knows exactly where she is at all times. You can't get GPS signals underwater, so we're basically building a little network underwater that ties into the GPS system and allows us to figure out where we are. And Cameo was talking earlier about us drilling holes, and we're really proud of ourselves because we've been the main hole drilling team, which is really fun. But early on in the season, we drilled one hole that was over 30 feet
deep. So it was over 30 feet through the ice. But most of the areas around here, we've been going through about 9 feet of ice.
That's amazing, 30 feet. Oh, my goodness. Well, that takes care of Brianna's question. Let's see, you have another question from the New Start. What do you hope to observe with Skinny? You might be getting to that.
Yeah, we'll be getting to that in a minute. But basically, Skinny is a tool that we want to use to allow us to get into new areas. So it's pretty logistic intensive to make a big hole, and you need to have a way of exploring if a place is worth making a big hole, worth investing the resources in making a big hole. So Skinny, because it's so easy to put it in through those little tiny holes, and because it only takes a couple people to drill the holes, is an easy way of going out and doing that first exploration, that first look, and then saying, ah, this is the area that I want to go. And then you can come in with a larger vehicle, something like Endurance, and do more complicated science.
Skinny has some objectives, and each year they're different. Last year it was to find some lost experiments. And this year's goals are they want to go to three different areas and see different things. So you're going to – actually, number two is where they went first, Cape Armitage, and they mapped the sponge field and tried to figure out why there's sponges there and not in other areas. And then they were supposed to go to Bay of Sails, but like everything in science, things change. And instead, we are at Cape Evans right now looking at what's happened underneath icebergs. It's kind of cool because you get to go right up to the iceberg. And then in about half an hour, we're leaving to go to Held Island to look at an area that's pretty much not been explored before. It's pretty cool. I'm excited because we're going on a helicopter.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You should see them. They're all decked out in their ECW gear. They're looking pretty sweet right now.
Oh, well, Robin, we'll leave it to you to take the picture of them doing the live event with their gear on. A couple questions that came up while you guys were chatting there. Red School would like to know, what were the changes you made after your last year, I think, to the design of Skinny?
So last year with Skinny, we were emphasizing making the navigation system work as well as possible. So that was what we really focused on. And we had a camera, but it was just kind of, yeah, it worked, and that was good enough. This year, what we're working on is making the camera and the lighting system work as well as possible. So we've got a 5-megapixel camera, which is a pretty good camera, but it's acting as a video camera and saving 17 frames per second. So you know when you take a picture with your digital camera and it takes it a few seconds before you can take another picture? Well, our camera is able to take 17 pictures per second, which is really awesome. And what that means for me is that whenever I grab a frame out of it, it's really high resolution. It's a 5-megapixel image. And so as a scientist, I can identify the animals that I see in that picture. And I'm seeing some of the other questions. Sarah wanted to know what the dimensions of Skinny are. So we talked about how Endurance weighs quite a lot. Skinny weighs a lot less than that, about 40 pounds. She fits through a 10-inch hole in the ice, so her actual dimensions are about 6.5 inches. And she's about maybe 4 feet long. Mm-hmm. So it's a much, much smaller, more controllable vehicle. And the idea is that, as Cameo was saying, it's backpackable in the Antarctic sense, which means we can load the whole thing in a single helicopter and fly to anywhere that we want to do some science.
Okay, kind of related to this, how deep has Skinny ever gone?
I'm so glad you asked. We broke a record the other day, 705 feet.
Wow. That's very amazing. And then there were a couple of other questions that you guys might have seen. Let's see. Christian wants to know how thick does the bacteria grow?
Is this a question about the dry valleys, lakes, or about the ocean?
Good question. We'll let them type that in. And in the meantime, we'll say Jonathan wants to know what the most successful expedition for Skinny has been.
Well, we've been really lucky, and we've had a lot of successes. The very first time that we put Skinny in the water on a science mission here, I saw two species that I had never seen alive before. So one I had only ever seen dead and in a jar, and the other one I had only ever seen smushed up and trawled off the seafloor. And every time we put it in the water, we see something that's new and different and unexpected. So I would say we've been really lucky. We've had a lot of successes so far. but it took a long time to get there. We had a lot of test dives and engineering dives where we were struggling to make things work properly, and now we're getting to the good part where we get to reap all the successes.
Okay, and then Rye, Junior High, would like to know, how does Skinny move?
So Skinny has several thrusters in the back. You can see Skinny's pointed downward, or in the picture, you can see that Skinny's pointed downward. And so at the top of the screen is the main thruster, which propels her forward through the water. Then she's got four additional thrusters that make her go sideways, so she can lateral sideways, or she can turn to the left or right. And then she has up and down thrusters that allow her to go up or to go down, or to tilt her nose down or her tail down. So she's mobile in all dimensions, and we have a joystick on the surface, and there's a pilot who sits there with the joystick, and it's basically like playing a video game. They're flying the vehicle, they're seeing what the vehicle is seeing, and they're controlling it to go wherever they want it to go.
And then New Start would like to know, how much did Skinny cost to build?
Well, Skinny is on a whole different scale from Endurance, because it's built to be a small, quick, easy to work with vehicle. So there's about $30,000 worth of parts in Skinny, and the entire budget for development so far is about $300,000.
Goodness gracious. And I want to know, what are all those little dots and things that are on Skinny?
All those little dots are holes that we've drilled in the PVC casing to allow air bubbles to come out quickly. So you can see that there's foam in Skinny, like the foam that's in Endurance. It's a little less depth rated than Endurance's foam, and it's not painted orange yet, but I would like it to be orange because I really like orange. But the holes are just basically to allow the air to get out.
Okay. And then we got clarification from Liverpool about that question. They want to know, in the bay, how thick can the bacterial colonies grow? And I'm not sure.
Most of the microbes that we see growing around this area are associated with areas of organic material. So that's a couple things. That's dead animals, it's sewage piles or piles of poop from the seals. And in some of those areas, the bacterial colonies can be up to 5 centimeters thick.
And then Shapley would like to know, how cold is the water under the ice?
It's 29 degrees, but it doesn't freeze because it's salt water. I just learned that the other day.
Okay, and I think we caught up. Let's see. You guys have some more slides for us. Are you there?
So these are some of the images from the seafloor, and we'll start with the most exciting one, which is the one in the upper right corner. Now, that may not look very exciting to you, but that's the animal that I was talking about that I've only ever seen trawled up off the deep sea floor. And so when I see it on the surface, it's piles of gooey, disintegrating, disgusting, slimy stuff, which I call whale snot. And when you see the animal on the sea floor, it's actually this 30-foot-long rope of an animal, which is really beautiful and really fantastic. So it's much different when it's at home and living than when it's been dragged across the seafloor and mixed up with rocks and then brought to the surface. And then in the lower right-hand corner are some of those giant sponges that Cameo was talking about that we've been looking for off of the Cape Armitage site. And usually these sponges are distributed with tens of meters in between them. And in this area, they're really close together. You can see those two right there are just right next to each other. So that's kind of exciting to see that. And then, of course, there are sea stars and anemones and other animals that you would expect to see in many oceans, and it's kind of neat that in the Antarctic it's such a similar system and it's so rich underwater. I see it as a question about whether Antarctica gets boring to the scientists working there, and I think that in general, Peter is shaking his head, it's never boring here. There's always new stuff to find and exciting stuff to see.
Okay, and there's another question for you there. Stacy and team, when you broke the depth record at over 700 feet, how much light is there?
Not much. It's actually very dark, not just because of the water overhead, but also because there's thick ice overhead. So Skinny brings her own lights with her. She has a set of forward-looking lights, which are LEDs. So there's a ring of lights that are LEDs and then downward-looking lights that are also LEDs. And when we calculate out the total brightness, it's like a car headlight. So she's got her own headlight that you drive around with, and we can control whether it's bright or dim depending on how close we are to the animals and how brightly reflective they are, so we don't blind ourselves.
Okay, and then Red School would like to know, is that the square that's on Skinny? Is the square on Skinny?
Yeah, that's the dome. Sorry. That's the dome case. It's in front of the acrylic port in front of Skinny's camera. So it's for protection because even though our pilots are really good, occasionally they bump into things, and we don't want them to scratch the lens in front of the camera because then we wouldn't be able to see through the scratches. So it's just a protective casing that's on there.
Okay. And then what was the pressure at 700 feet?
It's a whole lot. I'm doing a calculation in my head.
Okay.
So every 33 feet is another atmosphere of pressure. So it's about 20 atmospheres of pressure.
Okay.
Yeah, so each atmosphere is 14.7 pounds per square inch. So if you multiply that by 20, you'll have...
Look, everyone, you do the math.
Yeah.
No, Robin's doing great.
So it totals out to a little over 300 pounds per square inch.
Wow. Okay, and then there's another question. Are there some plans for Skinny after the three-year period?
Well, Robin's going Europa, but I don't think we're going to be taking Skinny to Europa. We do have a couple of proposals in to use Skinny for different projects. One is to work with some geologists. There's a project here that's drilling through the very thick ice on the ice shelf to get into the sediments underneath the ocean and to look at the long-term geological history of our planet. And the problem is that the ice overhead moves, and so as they're drilling in and drilling in, the ice keeps pulling the drill string away, and eventually they have to pull the drill string out, re-drill a new hole in the ice that's in the proper location, and then try to reinsert the drill string into the seafloor. So they leave a cone on the seafloor, a little re-entry cone, but they need some eyes to help them guide the end of the drill string back into that cone, and Skinny's going to provide those eyes, we hope. And then we're also going to modify Skinny with that proposal to put a manipulator arm on her, and that will allow her to change the drill string settings while she's in the water, hopefully. So we'll see how that one works. And then we have a second proposal that's in, which I think is really exciting, and that is to coordinate with penguin and whale biologists, and Skinny will have basically a fish finder on her that will allow her to image where prey items are, so where the fish are and where the krill are. And at the same time, the other biologists will be tracking where the whales and the penguins are. And so we can see the interactions between the predators and the prey in their locations in the ocean.
Okay. And since I know you guys are on a time constraint there, would you guys like to talk about your class for robots? And then we'll get back to some of the questions that have come up. So we have Robin and Cameo's class for robots.
Sure. It looks like, that's Scooby-Dooby-Doo, which is was built by some eighth graders at Rye Junior High in June of last year. And I got to say, Scuba launched here in Antarctica pretty flawlessly. But Peter and I were talking just briefly the other day about it's kind of nerve-wracking to be taking Endurance out into the field and, you know, hoping, is it going to work? And what if it doesn't work? There's a lot of time and energy and money invested, and that's one of the exciting things about doing experimental stuff, is that you're trying stuff and you never know. But I have to say, I was a nervous wreck when we took this thing out to the ocean, because there's a lot of eighth grade, or currently ninth graders, but last year's eighth graders with a lot of time and energy invested in this and hoping that it was going to work. And I was nervous about the cold and the cold temperatures, but it worked great. So basically, Scooby-Dooby-Doo is just PVC pipe with some cool noodles for flotation, and it's got a video feed camera on the front with a light system that basically just sends video feed up to the DVD player, and then we can record off the DVD, well, record what's shown on the screen on the DVD player. And then the control box there, it goes up and down, left and right, forwards and backwards, and it did perfectly. As soon as we put it in the water, we had imaging and turned the props on, and it went right down the dive hole. You would think I'd have tested it in the test pool first, but no, I took it right to the ocean first, and it did great.
Okay. And I think we have Cameo.
This is Sarah, and she's pretty similar to Scooby-Doo in that she's from PVC pipe, but she uses a slightly different thruster system. She uses bilge pumps. And unfortunately, she suffered a little damage on her way down to Antarctica. So Bob and I are currently working to try to fix her up, and hopefully she'll go in the water this weekend. But if you check with us next week when we're live, we'll let you know what happens.
Okay, great. We had a couple questions that came up kind of in between everything. And let's see, we'll start, or I'll just go backwards. Central wants to know, in general, what types of populations exist in Antarctica?
Well, if we're talking about people, there's about 1,000 people who live here at McMurdo Station. And then when you go out to the field camp, for example, when Peter and Robin go out, there's about 12 people out at their field camp. So it's kind of a distributed population, if that's the kind of populations that they're talking about at Central.
Plants,
oh, I see. Plants and animals.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the ocean, there's not a lot of plants. There's not a lot of algae because there's so little light. And so we get a bloom of microscopic plants that appear once a year when the ice thins and starts to melt. But the rest of the time, there's very little plant life. And that's why the water's so clear, as you can see in this picture. You can see a long ways underwater. And then there's incredible populations of animals underwater. So it's kind of a neat thing. You get on the land and you see very little stuff. You basically have to crawl around and really poke around to find the little microscopic things that are living on land. So you view it as a desert. You see only ice and rocks. But when you get underwater, it looks like a coral reef. There's soft corals, there's lots of sponges, there's sea stars, there's anemones. It's a beautiful, incredibly rich ecosystem.
Okay, and we have a class standing by that would like to ask a live question. Go ahead, Liverpool High School, Brett Foster's class.
Hi, my name is Kyrie Shaw, and I'm from Liverpool High School. My question is, what happened to the penguin that went through Ms. Elwood's campsite?
Well, my version of the story is that it waddled back to the colony and lived happily ever after. I'm not so convinced that that's what actually happened, though. When those Adelies get that far up into the dry valleys, it's typically a death sentence for them because there's nothing for them to eat, and they tend to get lost. In truth, that penguin wandered off from camp, and we don't know where it went. So there was a few other Adelies seen, one at Lake Frixel, one at Lake Bonney. We don't know whether it's the same penguin or if it's different ones. But so you can either live with my happy story or or what probably that penguin did not survive. But I do not know for sure.
Okay. Is there another question from Brett's class? Since you're up. Okay. We're going to go to Mr. Calderwood's class. Go ahead, Mr. Calderwood.
Hi, this is Gretchen. Besides visual data, is there any other quantitative data that Skinny can collect, like conductivity or dissolved oxygen?
Gretchen, that is an awesome question. Skinny right now doesn't have any sensors on her. We're working on one sensor at a time as we develop her. We are taking a CTD out into the field with us so we can measure conductivity and temperature and depth when we leave in about 5 minutes. And we're doing that for a couple of reasons. One is because for the navigation system for Skinny to work, we have to make sure that there are no reflective layers in the water column. So areas where the salinity changes or the temperature changes drastically and would make the signals bounce off of those different layers. But the other reason we're taking it out is because when we did our reconnaissance out at Hell's Island, we drilled through the ice into the ocean beneath, and the water was fresh water. So that was quite the mystery, and we know that there's a layer of fresh water out there sitting on top of the ocean water, and we want to know where that gradient is, and we've all placed bets on how thick the layer of fresh water is at this point.
Okay, and there was one that was typed while I was waiting for them. If you eat ice, as some people do, would the ice there make you sick?
I don't know. I've been volunteered to answer this question, but the ice is very, very clean. It depends whether we're talking about sea ice, lake ice, or glacier ice. They're all different things. And sea ice forms from the ocean water, and so the first year that it forms, it still has pockets of seawater in it, and so it might make you sick if you drink it. After it's been around for a while, a lot of the seawater drains out of it. So, in fact, people that go on the ocean for exploration, they melt that ice because after many years, it's fairly clean. Glacier ice is super clean. It's some of the best ice on Earth as far as cleanliness and drinkability. And then the lake ice is fairly clean as well because it's usually pretty old.
Okay, great. And we're going to go to Sheila Adams' class, Rye Junior High, for some live questions. Go ahead, Sheila.
Hi, my name is Christina, and I was wondering what is your favorite and least favorite part about Antarctica?
Probably all of us have different answers for that. One of my favorite parts is just having the opportunity to work with all these people and see what they're doing. And they're just doing some amazing things, and they're all really enthusiastic and excited about what they're doing. And it's just fun to be part of that. My least favorite part is leaving.
Okay.
And I also have another question. Did you enjoy going to the penguin colony?
Yes, that was a great trip. Actually, both trips was wonderful. As people in Rye know, it's been sort of a joke that I've been here. This is my fourth trip, and I had only ever seen one live penguin, so it became sort of a joke in Rye that, Robin's going to Antarctica. There won't be any penguins there. So to actually get to go to the colony was a thrill. And then the second time, I actually got to go into the colony to help deliver some of the fencing. So I got up close and personal with the penguins. So my little penguin juju paid off, Jillian.
Okay, we're going to turn to Louise McMinn's class. Go ahead, Louise.
It's Roger. I have a question. What qualifications do you need to scuba dive in in Antarctica, and what is it like scuba diving there?
Well, the qualifications are that you have to be pretty experienced as a diver. You have to be trained as a dry suit diver and have a certain number of dives of experience. And you also have to be certified as a scientific diver. So that is an extra level of training that you go through. And what it feels like is, well, it's really bulky and uncomfortable on the water, and Cameo can tell you how ridiculous we look when we're, like, rolling around on the surface. We're in our dry suits. We've got all this underwear on. We're trying to get the regulators into our mouths, but our mouths won't open. So it's pretty ridiculous. You have these big bulky gloves on. You can't do anything for yourself. You need all the help you can get. But then once you get underwater, it's beautiful, and you're weightless, and you're floating, and you can see a long ways. So it's an incredible feeling once you get past the stuff that happens on the surface.
And while you're talking there, Stacy, Jonathan wanted to know how heavy your diving gear is.
Was it how heavy your diving gear is? I didn't quite get the question.
Yes.
Well, we wear weight belts that weigh about 40 pounds, so that's pretty heavy. And then our tank rigs also weigh about 40 pounds, so that's 80 pounds. And then we have our dry suits and all the associated gear there, and that's probably another 20 or 30 pounds. So we're looking at 100 pounds of gear that we put on in order to get in the water.
Okay, and then another question that kind of relates to diving is Rye Junior High would like to know, have any of the animals ever interacted with your robots?
No, but actually when we launched Scuba Dooba Doo out at Turtle Rock, there was a lot of seals in the area, and we were hoping that a seal would swim by the camera, but we didn't have that luck. But just moments later, the seals came and swam around all of us, which was thrilling, of course, obviously. There's some little ice fish under the surface. I do have actually some of those on video. They're just little ones that we've seen. I actually just need to say Stacy and Cameo need to leave because they have a helicopter to catch.
Okay.
So they need to waddle out of here with all their ECW gear on. So I just wanted to give you a chance to say goodbye and to them.
So I want to encourage you all to please post your questions. If we didn't get a chance to answer them, I'm really sorry we have to go right now because we've all really enjoyed talking with you guys. So please post your questions on Cameo's website. And
Next Wednesday, we're going to do another presentation from here. So join us. You can ask more questions.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Stacy and Cameo and crew. Have a good day out there. And then those of you that want to stay on and ask Robin and Peter some more questions, please stay so. Or stay on. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, actually, I can stay, but Peter actually has an 8 o'clock meeting that he's got to get to, so if anybody has a quick question for him, you can shoot one off, but I can stay for a few more minutes.
Okay. I told Central that they would have a moment to ask their live questions, so go ahead, Central.
Hi, my name is Aaron. My question is, what kind of insects live in water or on land in Antarctica?
Okay, what kind of insects live in land or in water in Antarctica? from Anne.
Dry valleys, pretty much everything is microscopic. So in the water, it's all bacteria, algae, things like that. In the soils in the dry valleys, there's little microscopic worms, nematodes, and there's some minor insects called springtails, not very many of them, but they are there. So anything that lives there is pretty hardy. I'm going to go ahead and answer another question here. I can see that Sheila Adams is asking what qualities make Robin a good team member, and I'm going to embarrass Robin, as I usually do, and say that she's an incredibly hard worker. She's one of the best field people I've ever brought to Antarctica. Forget about being a teacher. She's been one of the best field people ever. She's always willing to work, and then she goes back and does her blog and communicates with you guys while we're all sleeping. So she's hardworking, she's intelligent, she's hardy, she's a good field person all around, and it's really great that she's here.
Yeah, I'm glad that Rye is able to share her with you. Okay, Central had two more questions that they were going to ask, so go ahead, Central.
What is the most populated animal species that live on Antarctica?
The most populated. Of course, Stacy would have the answer to that, and I can ask her to get confirmation later, but it depends on if you're talking above the water or below the water. And above the water, I would have to say penguins. They're probably the most populated. But they only live on the perimeter, on the where the ice edge and where they can access water. And underwater, oh boy, you've got all different kinds of fish. You've got all different kinds of anemones. So I would guess one of the fish species is probably the most populated, but I'm uncertain.
Okay, and Central, I encourage you to also type that in Stacy and Cameo's Ask the Team section so you can learn more about it. And then what's your last question, Central?
I'm Katie, and what's the timing of the seasons in Antarctica compared to North Dakota?
The time zone? In Antarctica, I know that we are 16 hours ahead of New Hampshire, and I would imagine North Dakota is probably 3 hours behind that, so you're probably 13 hours ahead, or we're 13 hours ahead of you.
Robin, she's asking about this season, so what season are you in compared to North Dakota right now? Season.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the season. I thought it was a time question. It is summertime here in Antarctica, so we are going into summer. This is going into the warm season. And it should be the exact opposite. If all is still the same as when I left, it should be the exact opposite up in North Dakota. You should be going into the winter time now.
Okay, and we have some questions that came up on the screen that relate to the endurance, so we'll ask them while you guys are still there. Can the endurance go into the salt water, and what are the dimensions for the endurance?
Yeah, those are good questions. The endurance can go into salt water, but it cannot control its buoyancy. So what has to happen is those orange floats that are on endurance need to be adjusted for salt water. So, for instance, right now those orange syntactics or the flotation pieces are modified for fresh water, which is what the surface of Lake Bonney is. So it can do the shallower water right now. Next year, they're going to bring it back and go to the deeper parts of Lake Bonney where the salt water is so that it can map the front of Taylor Glacier. So this year, they're going to do the higher level of the front of Taylor Glacier, mapping it, and next year, they're going to do the lower level, which is in the salt water, because they need to get the robot down there to do that, and they can't adjust the buoyancy, so they have to fix it so that it's stable. And I think it's about 4 feet high, and it's about 6 feet across.
And I think we're going to try to wrap it up. There are several classrooms that are having to log off right now. So if you guys didn't get your question answered today, please post them to the virtual base camp for Robin and Cameo to get the so they can answer. And just so you know, Robin is leaving tomorrow, right, Robin? You're heading back to the States, or at least to New Zealand? Anyway, we want to remind you about some upcoming events. December 3rd, Cameo and Stacy Kim are going to be talking again about their project, not so much about the robots, but overall what Skinny is all about. And then we have a special International Polar Year Day focusing on what happens above the poles and in the atmosphere above the South and North Pole, and that's on December 4th. And you can register for these at polartrek.com. So thank you, everybody, and thanks to the Endurance and Skinny teams. It was great to hear from you guys. And Robin, have a safe trip back home, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And you can unmute your phones or voice over IP and say goodbye. I'm sure that Robin can hear you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Robin.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.